We're back, baby, with an electric show. Frank Schwab joins us to talk who is this year's Cincinnati Bengals, a Super Bowl contending team that falls apart along the way for one reason, two reasons, many reasons. We have some great conversation ahead of you, even if we are being a little bit negative. Let's waste no more time. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, July 9th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball. This is actually my 6-year anniversary of my start date with Yahoo. So definitely a hell of a day to talk ball. It's been a hell of a 6 years. It's going to be a hell of a next 6 years, fingers crossed. Join me to talk some ball today is a man who has been with Yahoo for, I think, maybe 600 years. And I say that lovingly, Frank Schwab, because you are a company staple, an industry staple, a man who needs no introduction, but this is your introduction. Frank, what's going on, buddy?
I was going to congratulate you on the anniversary till you basically called me out for being a senior citizen, but that's fine. It happens. You know, I embrace the fact that I'm an old man at this point and have been at Yahoo since like before the, I don't even know how it happened, but before the internet was even invented, I was at Yahoo. So no, it's great.
They put up the website and then right away, first there, move yeah. was yeah, Frank yeah, Schwab.
It was like me, Wetzel, and C-Rob. No, congrats, Matt. It's awesome being your teammate. And as I kind of chided you a little bit on the interwebs this summer, every single podcast I listen to has a Matt Harmon guest spot. Like it could be a cooking podcast and it's like, oh, bringing on Yahoo Sports Matt Harmon now to talk about his souffle. So it's just been a crazy whirlwind for you, but it's always fun. It's always fun listening to your, you know, expertise on things. I respect your opinion and it has been great being your teammate for sure.
Frank, I mean, the feeling is mutual and man, I wish I got invited on to more shows to talk about cooking instead of like, hey, which wide receiver runs the best out route? Which receiver is going to be the breakout guy in fantasy this year?
There is a little repetition when you're a total expert in your field. And that means that you are going to be asked about the same guys over and over. But it's still entertaining. You make it sing every time.
Yeah. And listen, the good thing is I'm not bored of it. I do love it. And it's great to I'll be here as long as you guys will let me be here. Let's put it that way. So let's stop being nice to each other, Frank. Let's get negative here, buddy, because we are continuing our Flip the Script series. For those new, or again, we were off last week. Maybe you completely forgot about us. That's fine. Thanks for coming back. Flip the Script is we essentially kind of take a look back at last year's biggest surprises and disappointments of 2023 and try to identify kind of like who is going to be this year's version. It's not always perfect. It's not always a complete one-to-one exercise, but it gives us a template of what to look for this year. Today, we're going to be focusing on who is this year's Cincinnati Bengals, a Super Bowl playoff contending team that fell apart last year. Again, we're trying to look for maybe one of those Jenga teams. To shout out Dave Damashek, my former colleague at the NFL Network. You just take one piece out, one thing happens, one bad bounce. You know, one unexpected fall off of a unit, the whole operation starts collapsing. So, Frank, we got to get pretty negative on this show, but I do think it's important to try to maybe even if our predictions don't come true, which we hope they don't, because we want the best for all these teams and all these players. It is at least worth noting, like, how can things go wrong when we're starting to do our preseason projections?
Yeah, absolutely. And as you know, I'm doing my preseason previews. And so I'm digging into all these teams, trying to, you know, be contrarian a lot of times, find flaws. Like, everybody's on the Bears bandwagon. How can I pick holes in that a little bit or go against the grain sometimes? And it often works out spectacularly wrong when you do this exercise. Yeah. Anybody hopefully does not remember we did this. I was on the same exact episode a year ago and talked on and on and on about how maybe we're overrating the San Francisco 49ers. That did not work out so well, Matt. I knew in the first half of the first game, I literally was sitting there. We're in the Yahoo Sportsbook at the Venetian Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, me and Jason Fitz. And I was watching the 49ers tear apart the Steelers saying, oh, I was totally wrong. Within one half of football, I knew that I was wrong on my 49ers take. But there's sometimes you hit on this. There are lessons to be taken from what happened to the Bengals last year and how we can identify which teams might not reach expectations this year. It happens all the time. It happens all the time that there's almost always the top five team in the preseason power rankings that doesn't make the playoffs at all. I think there were three teams like that a couple of years ago, including the Rams coming off their Super Bowl. So, yes, I'm probably going to be wrong because this is a hard exercise to do when you're just kind of tearing apart really, really hyped teams. But we're going to try anyway and see what we can come up with.
Yeah, and last year's example of this was who's going to be this year's Broncos. I wasn't going to mention the 49ers thing, Frank. You are a man. You're a good man. You're a man of accountability. I was not going to. Hey, listen, everybody I think who participated in this exercise last year looks like an idiot in some way this year. That's just how the whole prediction business works. And if you're afraid of being wrong, you're in the wrong business. And Frank Schwab's not here.
I'm not afraid of being wrong because I do it all the time. I have a lot of practice at it, Matt.
And so do I. And again, so does everybody. But learning from your mistakes and sort of, again, building these templates is important. Again, last year's example was who's going to be this year's Broncos. We don't really have a team quite like that, which is why we have to focus on the Bengals. I mean, the one team that, you know, was a hyped team that fell off and had a losing record last year was the New York Jets. And that's one that's like not fun to talk about, right? Because
we all know what happened. Yeah.
We know what went what went wrong.
It's a 5-second conversation. Yeah.
Exactly. And as much as a 5-second podcast sounds nice from probably our schedule standpoint, it probably doesn't sound like good content from a listener standpoint. So we're talking the Bengals who fell off, but you know, still went 9-8. They were still, I think they survived late in the season with Jake Browning pretty well. So that's, again, going to make this a more interesting conversation. But before we talk about who's going to be this year's Bengals, a playoff team that maybe doesn't reach those expectations, let's talk about what happened to last year's Bengals. Of course, Joe Burrow injuries, the calf in the preseason, then eventually the wrist. Those are the obvious ones, Frank. And if you want to kind of expand on Burrow and kind of where he stands at this point, that's fine. But what other issues did the Cincinnati Bengals face last year that made them fall off from a Super Bowl contender to a 9-8, like we survived the season type of campaign?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I just wrote the Bengals preview that's going to be coming up. It hasn't published yet. But in writing that, basically the lead I had was that years from now, we're going to look back and say, oh, the Bengals missed the playoffs during the Joe Burrow era. That's because he got hurt and nothing else. When that really was not the truth. A lot of things went wrong for the Bengals last year. And then just the knockout blow was Joe Burrow's wrist injury. And it started, you know, early in training camp when Joe Burrow hurt his calf, missed all of August. And when he came back, he just couldn't move. You could see it. Like, and the offensive line really got exposed. That was not a good line. Burrow couldn't move to get out of the way. The offense had nothing going downfield because he couldn't buy any time for himself to get the ball downfield. T. Higgins became a ghost in the offense. And all of this could be related to the calf. But I also hesitate to just put it completely on a preseason injury. And then obviously the wrist injury that happened in November. It was the defense fell apart. That has nothing to do with Joe Burrow's wrist, right? Like, or his calf. Like, the defense could not stop the run at the end of the year. They really, really struggled. They've never been a great defense, but they've always been more competitive than they were at that time in the season. And, you know, I mean, the crazy thing is, like, we would just like to think that, oh, they fell apart when Joe Burrow went out of the lineup for the rest of the season. I think people would be shocked to know that in terms of these are two, look, the cherry pick stats. PFF grade and passer rating, Jake Browning was better than Joe Burrow last year. I think that that's a little troubling. That this guy who we all know is a star really did not play well when he played. Now, if you want to blame it all on the preseason injury, I'm fine with that because I love Joe Burrow. I think he's a superstar. I think he's going to be a superstar going forward. But yeah, we have to examine that a little bit. This wasn't a team that fell apart with Jake Browning. He actually played pretty well with Jake Browning. Browning played pretty well himself. I'm surprised he didn't get more attention in the offseason as far in his free agency. So we have to look at everything that went wrong with the Bengals. Why T. Higgins disappeared. Why the offensive line just kind of really, really got exposed last year. Why the defense fell apart, which obviously has nothing to do with the quarterback. And it all kind of came together for the Bengals where they just, like you said, it just one thing happened, like the Jenga analogy, and it just all crumbled for them. Now, real quick, before I throw it back to you, our NFL editor, Joey Galino, pointed out to me privately, he said, don't forget that game against the 49ers. The Bengals were getting hot in the middle of the season, and they went to San Francisco and just destroyed the 49ers, completely outplayed the 49ers in a win there, one of the most impressive wins all year. So maybe there is something to be said about, hey, if Joe Burrow stays healthy the rest of the year, maybe they go on and make the playoffs anyway. But yeah, a really, really strange year for the Bengals.
Yeah, like I think they could have been the final seed ahead of the Steelers, right? Or something like that.
Sure, they're a better team than the Steelers, probably. At that point, when the moment Joe Burrow got hurt on that primetime game against the Ravens, they were a better team than the Steelers. Like, I mean, they were one of the 12 best teams in the NFL for sure.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's like, I think that the easy thing to say is that had Burrow stayed healthy the rest of the way, maybe we don't care about how he started the season, because I think one of the most prescient things I read week one last year, week two last year, was Derek Klassen breaking down Joe Burrow's film and basically saying I don't know who's wearing number 9 for the Bengals right now, but it's not Joe Burrow. And that was just the way it felt watching him early in the season. So, but again, I want to come back to the offense, because you brought the defensive point up, and I think that is the biggest thing that people forget about that team last year, that, you know, maybe they were never one of the best defenses in the NFL, but Lou Anarumo was pitching heat during their Super Bowl run, their run to face the Rams in 21. And then if you look back at 2022, they were 7th in defensive success rate and they were 8th in EPA per play allowed. Spin that to last year, they're 27th and 31st, 27th in EPA, 31st in success rate. So that is a huge cataclysmic fall. And a lot of that comes back to, you know, this is a team that spent a lot of resources on the offensive line. They spent a lot of resources, obviously, building up the offense. And then they made a lot of, in a weird way, we typically think you don't build a defense or you don't build a team in free agency. But they had built that team and that defense, especially mostly through free agents. And then once they had to start paying Burrow and obviously then some more on the offensive side, and again, still spending on tackles like Orlando Brown, you start drafting guys to maybe step up, you know, Dax Hill, you take some of these guys like Miles Murphy, and those guys weren't contributors really last year. They weren't plus starters. That I think is actually the big, you know, you let a guy like Jesse Bates walks to Atlanta, has a great year in Atlanta. That's a big difference. Von Bell's in Carolina. He's actually back there now, but that's what's so interesting, I think, about this Bengals team, is that they hit some home runs on the offensive side of the ball on the draft. They haven't done that in the defense yet. I think that has been the biggest difference between sort of the Bengals of 21 and 22, and then obviously the Bengals we got last year, beyond the fact that their quarterback wasn't healthy.
Right, and sometimes a change that we don't make a lot out of ends up being a pretty big deal, like the safeties last year at the Bengals. You talked about Jesse Bates, who had a really, really good year in Atlanta, but also Von Bell. Like you said, he left, and their safety play was abysmal last year. So they go back. They get Von Bell right back. He's obviously fit, knows the scheme really well. They also signed Geno Stone from coming off a great year at the Ravens. So maybe that fixes that issue. We don't think a lot of safeties right in the offseason. We're talking all these previews. They lost this safety. It's just not something that's on our radar, but that made a big difference for the Bengals, who, you know, one of the stats I really like to lean on, it's a very simple one. It's yards per play differential. It's simple. How many yards per play do you get on offense? How many do you give up on defense? The Bengals were 30th in the NFL in that category last year. That leads me to believe that was a bad football team. And again, if Jake Browning was just abysmal, he was the Jets, you know, backup quarterbacks, Tim Boyle and all that, but he wasn't. He was pretty good. Yeah. So we have to dig into, they were the third worst team in the NFL in this very telling stat. Does that mean something going forward? Does that mean the Bengals are going to bounce right back? Or is that kind of telling to say, hey, these defensive issues might not be fixed and the offensive ones might not either? You might have a better answer than this than me. I still don't know what happened to T. Higgins last year. T. Higgins came out in game one and had 8 targets, 0 catches, 0 yards. And that was kind of his season. He had 2 big 200-yard games. He never became a factor. What did you see at T. Higgins? Because I think that was a key point, too. In that, was it just all, you know, the offense and the offensive line and Burrow not being able to move? T. Higgins, he was a guy who was going back to fantasy. He's a guy I was drafted late second round a lot of times last year, early third, and he was just a non-factor. What did you see? You've looked at his game. What happened to T. Higgins last year?
Yeah, Higgins, I think, had his worst year as a pro last year, just from an individual standpoint. Looking at reception perception, lowest success rate versus man, lowest success rate versus zone, lowest success rate versus press of his 3-year career. And in a couple of those categories, it wasn't even close. I do think he played a lot of the season injured, maybe not to start. It's one of those things where, you know, his quarterback's not healthy. That didn't help him in week one. And then as his quarterback gets healthy, he's dealing with injuries, and then he's playing with a backup, and he's also got injuries in the back half. So I think it was just sort of like a like talk about a Jenga piece season for him. You start pulling one thing and another thing goes wrong. That whole situation with T. Higgins, I think that's the biggest part of it. I think Higgins is a good receiver. I do think he's gotten a touch like overrated because of these, both of these guys are so good. Like, I think T. Higgins probably could be a number one on another team, but I don't know if I feel like locked in for sure about that. I think he's is he a top 15 receiver? I don't, definitely maybe top 20, but I think he's a little bit, it's unfair to talk about him right now just because this is the worst season of his career that he's coming off of. But again, I think I'm sort of, after 4 years in the NFL, that's sort of where I stand with Higgins as a player. Like, I don't think he is I don't think they've got like two alpha receivers, basically. I think they have an elite number one in Jamar Chase, who just offers so much more. And then they have a guy in T. Higgins who, even when he's healthy, like, he's a good separator, but not a great separator, and sort of invites those like high degree of difficulty targets. And that's how you get like a 8-target, 0-catch performance with a quarterback who's not healthy. So again, a lot of different factors there for T, but that's sort of just where, like, state of the state with him at this point.
Yeah, he's basically going to become Alvin Harper with whoever he signs with next year. That's an old school reference for you senior citizens out there who remember Alvin Harper signing with the Buccaneers. I just think that the exercise here is to show that just small things can add up very quickly in the NFL because the margins are so small. We all love the Bengals going into last year. And then T. Higgins, you know, he falls off a little bit. Joe Burrow starts slow. The defense takes a little bit of a step back without those safeties, especially. And all of a sudden it just crumbles. And that can happen. It can definitely happen to teams. And you even look at this year, T. Higgins. I mean, if there was any part of his drop off last year that had to do with his unhappiness with his contract, well, that hasn't been resolved. He's still on a franchise tag. And guys, look, people are human beings here. And we've seen it with Ayuk. We've seen it with other guys. If you're not happy with your contract, it's on your mind a lot. And maybe that, I'm not saying it has or hasn't happened with Higgins. He really hasn't said much about it at all, but it's a possibility, something we have to factor in. And then even with Burrow, okay, he's coming off wrist surgery. He's going to be there for week one. But just because he's there week one does not necessarily mean he's 100%. This is a wrist injury that even Joe Burrow said, I researched this and I could not find another quarterback that's ever dealt with this. It sounds like a very serious wrist injury. I hope Joe Burrow's back at full strength. But to use the well-worn cliche of the baseball pitcher, if Joe Burrow goes from a 97-mile-an-hour fastball pitcher to 95, 94, the margins again in the NFL are pretty slim. And then he goes from a great quarterback to maybe a good quarterback. Look, a lot of things could just add up really, really quickly for any NFL team that we have high hopes for going into the season.
Especially because I think what I learned about the Bengals last year after Joe Burrow was out for the season is just how much that offense, and maybe this is obvious, but just how much of that offense is Joe Burrow dictated. Because when Browning's in there, you know, they're getting under center, their run game and their pass game makes a little bit more sense together. They're doing more play action. They're using a lot more motion. Whereas with Burrow, he kind of wants to be in the gun, be in empty, spread things out and do the Aaron Rodgers, the Peyton Manning, that type of stuff. He's much more of an old school quarterback than some of these other guys. And I'm very fascinated to see, in, as you point out, what's a pivotal offseason for him from a from a health perspective. I want to see if they can mold those two like things together. Use some of the Browning concepts with Joe Burrow, because I think that would make Joe Burrow's life easier. And actually, if he is, you know, losing a little bit of that fastball, and again, it's an if he's losing a little bit of that fastball, if he's maybe not 100% healthy, take a little bit of that burden off of his shoulders by doing some of those quarterback cheat code type things. That's how you get a good season or a good little stretch out of Jake Browning. You do stay viable. But does Joe Burrow want to do that? I don't know. That's going to be the fascinating thing about this year's Bengals. And I think we've set a good table here of kind of what to expect out of these teams. So, Frank, let's move into who's going to be this year's Bengals. I think just qualification, they've got to be a playoff team from last year with relatively similar expectations going into 2024. So I figure we just go through the playoff teams from last year. And some of them we can throw out right away because, like, I talked about the Steelers earlier. They're a playoff team. We're not going to come here and say the Steelers are going to be the Steelers. What a take. No, we got to be a little bit more ambitious than that. As we always do with Flip the Script, we'll try to get three finalists. We'll rank those finalists. And then if there's a tie, producer Colin is going to pick the the winner there if we've got similar, if we've got a tie for that. By the way, I think Colin actually helped break the tie last year in favor of the 49ers, Frank. So to get you a little bit off the hook here, let's throw a little bit of blame on Colin, who was probably speaking with his heart as a diehard Cowboys homer. So yeah, I'm gonna blame that on him, not just you, because he can't speak for himself here. He just said F the Niners in the chat. So yeah, I'm right. Okay. All right. So let's go through the 2023 playoff teams. Let's start in the AFC and let's go with the number one seed, the Ravens. Okay. So Ravens, Frank. Are there any sort of warning signs maybe that the Ravens could be a team that we got to look out for in this exercise?
And yes. And again, please just destroy the footage of this if the Ravens end up being the first seed again, because that's what they do, right? Like, I've discounted the Ravens plenty of times over the years because you look at their roster turnover and you say, how can they replace all these guys? But the infrastructure is so strong there. John Harbaugh is such a good coach. They always end up being good. But you look at the Ravens this year, and a lot of salary cap stuff kind of caught up with them. An interior the offensive line, they both of their guards left and they didn't do anything to replace them. They lost a little bit on defense too. And I think the Mike McDonald loss is huge. Like, you're seeing around the league that now Mike McDonald's almost the Kyle Shanahan of defense. And I know that that comparison has been made before, but in this case, it's picking guys off of his staff, the Anthony Weavers or whatnot, where you're saying, we want a piece of this Mike McDonald defense. He was a great coach for them. He coached them up. They led the NFL in sacks last year without a great one-on-one pass rush. They don't have a TJ Watt, I don't think. But yet they led the NFL in sacks. I think his scheme is so good. He really lifted that defense. And so you combine all of these kind of small things, losses for the Ravens, and also the fact that they might play in the toughest division in the NFL. I mean, we could sit here and kind of make fun of the Steelers a little bit for sneaking into the playoffs, but they're still a good football team, and that's your last place football team. I'm really high on the Browns coming into this year. Bengals, we talked about ad nauseum. They could be a Super Bowl contender again. Wouldn't surprise me. See, add all these things up for the Ravens, and I'm a little curious. It wouldn't surprise me at all. Let's put it to you this way. I will not be picking them to win the division this year. I respect them. I respect what they've done. Lamar Jackson's a future Hall of Famer because all multiple MVPs go into the Hall of Fame. But there's a lot to be concerned about with the Ravens. As far as, you know, they're not going to be 6-11 or anything, Matt, but could they, you know, be a wild card team? Could they even be out of the playoffs if a couple injuries happen and there's a really tough AFC? Yeah, it could happen like that because the Ravens did not have a great offseason.
No, I mean, obviously, number one, the Mike McDonald loss, and then the fact that all those coaches were plucked away as well. I mean, Zach Orr is the guy they tapped to replace, and maybe that's who they wanted all along. Maybe that's just the guy internally. This is like, okay, this is the next guy to take this defense over, but that's a question worth asking. And then on top of it, like all of those players that also went out the door. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney, Ronald Darby, Patrick Queen, Geno Stone, who you mentioned, and then on the offensive line too, Kevin Zeitler, John Simpson, like they're transitioning pretty heavily in two critical areas. And that does feel a little Bengals-ish, right? Is they don't just lose some players and some, maybe some ancillary players and supporting guys, that whole thing. They still have, of course they still have Roquan Smith. That's awesome. They still have plenty of players on. They were able to retain Matt Ibuka. Like they have some guys on that defense still, but some pieces got plucked, and then you also take Mike McDonald out. That could end up being very Bengals-ish. I like that call. And then, yeah, the offensive line I think is important to talk about here. They're counting on guys like Andrew Voorhees and Ben Cleveland stepping up. Roger Rosengarten, a rookie, might be the starting right tackle on this team. Mm-hmm. There is a chance that those guys get out there and they're just maybe even better than, I mean, John Simpson, who was a replacement level player with the Raiders, like that's all possible that they go out there and they just end up being better. But Ronnie Stanley is not the same player that he used to be. I think we can just accept that he's never getting back to that pro, like all pro level player that he was prior to the injury. And then you look at the receiver room too, Frank, like I love Rashad Bateman. They love Rashad Bateman, but man, like Bateman better be, what they're talking him up to be, because otherwise, I mean, it's Zay Flowers, but then, Nelson Aguilar and like, that's kind of it. So there's definitely, I think, more questions with the Ravens than appear on the surface.
Absolutely. And one thing, going back to the coordinators real quick, I've been trying to stress this all off season because I lost sight of it last year. We don't pay enough attention to when teams lose their coordinators who kind of get not being fired or anything, but being promoted to a head coaching job elsewhere. Last year, look at the Eagles. We're like, oh, Brian Johnson and Sean Desai, they'll be just fine because of all the talent. And they've really missed Shane Steichen and Jonathan Gannon. And, you know, you look at a team like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers losing Canales or the Ravens losing Mike McDonald. These are big losses. Or Cowboys losing Dan Quinn. When you have losses like this, they sometimes do hurt a lot. Zach Orr might be an awesome defensive coordinator, but we just don't know that right now. He could be an absolute failure. He's not ready for the job. We just have no idea whatsoever. So I think that the McDonald thing is big. And like you talked about, with just a lot of, again, little things that the Ravens usually are totally fine covering this all up and next man in, and they're pretty good that way. But it's something to keep an eye on, especially in that division.
Yeah. Last point just on the Ravens, and I think they might end up being our finalists, but we'll save that until the end. Just there is part of me that just like you've got Lamar Jackson, who's a top five quarterback, and he's actually in the second season with Todd Monken, which I think matters a lot. Just like
that's a good point. Yeah.
He won the MVP in his first year in that offense. And like there is a chance this unit takes a step forward. That makes me still feel pretty confident in the Ravens.
I mean, Mark Andrews comes back, right? Like, he missed him for a couple months.
And Isaiah Likely showed really well. Like, is there a way that they can get those two tight ends on the field at the same time? And just the fact that like the Ravens have so much, I think, earned trust, proof of concept of, like you said, next man up. Like we plug these holes fine. We find the next John Simpson or you know, whatever, if we lose that guy. Like other teams overpay for our role players, and then we just find another way to plug that hole. That makes me still feel pretty confident in them. But I do love the point just about the Brian Johnson example from the Eagles really sticks home to me as in talking about this defense, that people complained about what Brian Johnson did on offense. That was basically the same offense that they ran out with Shane Steichen the year before, but the coordinator just didn't push the right buttons. Like they didn't,
right,
he didn't
right.
have that
they could,
in-game
no counter
feel.
Punches. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. The defense has said, we're going to take this away from you. What's your next counter punch? Shane Steichen had that counter punch. Brian Johnson didn't. Again, people need to realize, and I think they do, the margins in the NFL are so small. Like the difference between the best team and the 32nd best team is not as big as you think it is. And the small stuff like that really adds up.
All right. So I think the Ravens might end up being one of our three finalists, but let's save that until the end. Let's talk the Bills, the second seed in the AFC. Ironically enough, it was not the Super Bowl winning Kansas City Chiefs. I think the Bills look like they're a pretty easy team to talk about in this regard too, because they have had some offseason losses as well, Frank. But when you really put the microscope to some of the players that they lost in the offseason, not all those guys were at the height of their powers anymore, especially on the defensive side of the football. Diggs is sort of a separate conversation, although I definitely think he's not the same player that he used to be at his peak. Still a good player, but not the same player. So Bills, what's the state of the state with the Bills? Are they a little too easy for this exercise, or do you actually still have some faith in them coming into this year?
Yeah, if we were doing this episode 3 months ago, Bills might have been the first team I mentioned. But I've kind of come around to the idea of we're kind of overlooking the Bills. As weird as that sounds for a team that's been right at the top of the NFL, near the top of the NFL for a few years now, and always this popular Super Bowl pick, everybody kind of gave up on them. Oh, the Super Bowl window's closed. I said that a few months ago. But you really start looking, we forget how good the Bills were last year. They had that really weird early start to the season with losses like that Broncos loss and whatever that were really fluky, but they, you know, had that drive at the end of the season to make the playoffs. And they had they lost a close game against the Chiefs at home. They should have won it. They're going to kick themselves for that. I get that. But that's what we remember last about the Bills. Oh, they failed in the playoffs. Well, this is still a really good team. And even if they take a small step back, they're still going to be really good. Like this is not a team that I can foresee being 8-9 at the end of the year, unless Josh Allen gets hurt or something kind of out of their control. The Diggs thing, look, after Joe Brady took over as our coordinator midseason, Diggs wasn't even a big part of what they did. Like, he just kind of disappeared. They kind of morphed in offense shapes. Cook had a bigger role, all this kind of stuff. So I don't know that the Diggs loss is as big as we think. We just look at that receiver room and say, oh my God, who's going to be catching balls? And I get that. That's one of the reasons I might not be picking the Bills to win the AFC East, but I don't think they're going to fall off. Like, I mean, we're not going to be sitting here going, oh my goodness, the Bills are going to miss the playoffs. I just don't foresee that big of a drop for them.
Yeah, I think their losses are overstated. And I think, again, similar to how I said with like Lamar Jackson, second season of the offense here with Joe Brady fully taking the thing over, and we've got a top five quarterback here in Josh Allen. I'm also with you that I don't really, I I think they're a tough team to figure out for fantasy. Like, how is that receiver room going to shake out, that whole thing? But from just like a real life perspective, I generally don't see them falling off, especially on the offensive side of the football, which really matters here. Like, I mean, I think that receiver room can come together. Maybe there's not going to be like a number one here, but I think it can come together.
Yeah, but a lot of guys get like 750 yards, right? Like,
totally.
Khalil Shakir, like, you know, I mean, 70 catches, 789 yards, and 6 touchdowns. You know, like that kind of, that's going to be their number one guy, and they'll piece it together. I totally see that. And, you know, Kincaid getting more involved and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I just, again, I've kind of done a 180 on the Bills where I was really down on them a couple months ago, thought there might be a big fall off, but did you really start looking under hood? This is a good football team and an infrastructure strong. And I just don't think losing Diggs is going to mean that big of a drop off for Buffalo.
Yeah, I think Allen's ready to take over more of like a heavier burden on the offense and sort of be like a distributor here. And I mean, it's always going to flow through him. So I'm pretty confident in them. Look, next team here, third seed in the AFC, the Chiefs. Frank,
we could just skip the four. They're not. I'm not doing this again. I'm not doing this again with the Chiefs, where I discount them. They're awesome. They're great. I look. They're going to be a Super Bowl contender again. I'm done trying to pour dirt on the Kansas City Chiefs. They're just here to stay until proven otherwise.
Yeah, the top headline for Patrick Mahomes right now, if you pop this in Google News, is Patrick Mahomes reveals his strategy for press conferences. I think the only thing that would make me want to have a conversation about the Chiefs is if it was Chiefs QB Patrick Mahomes reveals he will be spending the 2024 season on Mars. So because that's not happening, we can move on to the fourth seed here, indeed, which is the Houston Texans, which, Frank, spoiler alert, I know you want to talk about the Texans here as a potential team. So I was shocked by this one, but give me your reasoning here.
It's something I've brought up before that I believe in. It's a baseball term, so I'm sorry, Matt. But the plexiglass principle, which was a Bill James thing, which when a team improves a ton in 1 year, it's hard for them to improve again. Usually they take a little bit of a step back. That just happens. It's something that happens over and over. And I just, the more I'm thinking about the Texans, and look, it's so easy to get excited about them, right? Like CJ Stroud, yeah, had a rookie season I've never seen before. He was so far beyond his years as a quarterback that I just can't say enough good things about CJ Stroud. I get this, right? But maybe they just do take a little bit of a step back. This is a team, like I always think about it in terms of this. How would the conversation be different if this 50-50 thing went against them? If they lose against the Indianapolis Colts in week 18, on the road, I think they were underdogs in that game, maybe slightly favored, whatever they were. If they lose that game and the Colts win the division, Texans never go to the playoffs, never beat the Browns in the playoffs, what's the conversation about the Texans right now? Is it, oh my God, this team could win a Super Bowl? I don't think so. So yeah. I just think the offseason hype has gotten a little too heavy for them. Yes, the Diggs trade is very splashy, but there's a possibility. We've seen the best of Stephon Diggs. He was really a non-factor in the second half, 10 games, whatever it was, at the end of last season. So I wonder if we're overrating that. I don't know if their defense is any better. They swap out Greenard for Danielle Hunter, which I don't think is an upgrade necessarily. There's enough questions about maybe the Texans regressed just a little bit. And I also think we've completely forgotten about the Jaguars. Look, the Jaguars were on pace to win 11, 12 games last year, and then Trevor Lawrence suffers a high ankle sprain and was not the same player down the stretch. Like there's a bunch of things that went wrong with the Jaguars, but we can also create a picture where Trevor Lawrence stays healthy and they go on to win 11 games. It was a pretty good football team until he got hurt last year. And also I'm really high in the Indianapolis Colts. I'm also wish casting Anthony Richardson for 17 games, which might not happen, but there's enough to like about those two teams that maybe Houston doesn't win this division. And once you get thrown in that wild card, the wild card waters, there's no guarantee you're going to beat out teams like the Jets or the Bills or the second, third place finishers in the AFC East and the South or the North. So I just have enough questions about the Texans right now to wonder, maybe we're a little too far over our skis with the Texans and maybe they do take a step back this season.
The strength, or at least potential strength, of the division does give me a little bit of pause, because I'm with you. I'm high on the Colts. I think the Jags can kind of find themselves, and even the Titans, man, like Will Levis is good, that Titans offense is going to be at least plucky. I don't know that they're going to be a great team, but like
they're a team with a million variables. And if some of these variables hit, if Callahan is an upgrade on the offense and playing more up-tempo suits them, and Calvin Ridley really was misused in Jacksonville, as you've pointed out and gotten semi-famous for this offseason. And, you know, I mean, all these things with the Titans could turn out their way. I'm not high on them right now, but yes, it's a good point on the Titans.
Only shooting for semi-famous here in the Harmon household. So, yeah, no, I think that they could at least there could be a week where one of these any of these teams contending teams any of the teams in the AFC South for sure lose a game to the Titans, and we're like, how the hell did that happen? And then we're kind of starting to pay attention to the Titans a little bit. So yeah, the strength of the division, or at least potential strength, does give me pause. But man, I don't know, I feel so good about where Stroud is. Season two of Bobby Slowick here, season two of D'Amico Ryans installing what he wants on defense. Will Anderson's coming off a great year. Now, I do have some questions. I'm with you on that defense. Like, you're dropping Azeez Al-Shaair in there. Hopefully that's a good signing. I did like that move. I like the Danielle Hunter signing. But, you know, you still got Jeff Okuda on the other side there, projected as the starter at right cornerback. Is Lassiter, the rookie, going to upseat him right away? That would probably be a good thing across from Derek Stingley, who had a nice year last year. I generally think the defense is trending up. And on offense, like, I think that the thing that we, with the exercise with the Bengals, like, one thing starts to go wrong, many things can start to go wrong. The thing I think about the Texans here, Frank, is like, okay, let's say Stephon Diggs comes in there and he's not the same Stephon Diggs, which I think, by the way, is just like, I don't think he's the same player anymore. I think he's still a good receiver based on his film last year, but he's not the same vertical receiver. I think he can help them in like the short to intermediate routes if he's willing to kind of be that guy, which is a whole separate conversation. But like, okay, let's say he's not there. Nico Collins is, I mean, potentially a top 12 receiver in the league.
He's here. Yeah, he's already
he's here. Tank Dell was awesome as a rookie.
Awesome. Awesome. Diggs might be their number three receiver, and how is he going to react to that?
That is a fair question. Although I do think that people underrate like just how much Stephon Diggs wants to win a Super Bowl. And yeah, like if fair. This team, so that's just again, whole separate conversation. But let's say Tank Dell's not 100% coming off this injury. Well, again, maybe Diggs helps there. Maybe Nico Collins, like they're so well insulated, and they still have a pretty good offensive line that I respect you for going out on the limb here. I have a tough time. Like, I can see with the Texans being slightly disappointing. If the expectation is they're the second best team in the conference, but
and
I have
think
a tough time
expectation right now, isn't it? Like, you look at the Super Bowl odds, I think they might be second or third. I just wonder if just we've extrapolated like a team that barely made the playoffs last year and just totally. Said, oh, Stroud's going to be so much better a second. Not all improvement is linear. I mean,
totally,
sometimes
yeah.
you do take a little bit of stuff. I love CJ Stroud. And I hate to even be saying negative things about him because he could win MVP this year. Wouldn't surprise me at all. Again, he has that ceiling. We all know that. But I don't know. There's just enough that I'm like, are we a little too ahead of ourselves with the Texans right now based on what happened at the end of last season? It's possible. It's somewhat, again, this is a hard exercise to do because every one of these teams looks great right now. We're not like sitting here saying, oh yeah, the Texans are terrible. No, everybody wants to be excited about the Texans, where I'm like, if I'm trying to be contrarian, I'm saying, you know, maybe they don't win the division. And that would be a pretty big disappointment for them.
Totally fair. And I think it's really smart to, I say this on the show a lot, when everybody assumes one thing, my natural instinct is also to be pretty contrarian. So but I have a tough time with the Texans, but we'll see if we make them a finalist. Let's move on to the Browns here. I don't know if we need to have an extended conversation about the Browns, Frank, because it's like they were a weird playoff team last year, and like we all know how things will not go well if things don't go well for Cleveland. It'll be that Deshaun Watson is still the same sub-average quarterback that he's been so far in Cleveland. So again, kind of a weird team to talk about here with the Browns.
I'll give you my 30-second spiel on the Browns. I think that they made the playoffs last year because they were so good around the quarterback position. It's not like Joe Flacco had some magic beans. He's still the same guy who looked completely washed up with the 2022 Jets. He was just in such a great situation. And I think that people love dunking on Deshaun Watson. I get every reason why everybody wants to root against Deshaun Watson, but there are reasons he hasn't played well the last couple of years, whether it was injuries or the suspension, which was all his fault. Obviously, I know that story. But if Deshaun Watson is just the 15th best quarterback in the NFL, which I don't think is asking too much of a guy who was once a top 5 or 6 quarterback in the NFL, I think the Browns can win a Super Bowl. I really do. I think that they're that good around the quarterback position that if Deshaun Watson is just okay, this team's going to win the division and are going to be a Super Bowl contender. I just love their roster. I love the direction they're heading. It's just all about Deshaun Watson. If he stinks, and he could stink, there's no doubt about that. It's been a long time since he's played at an elite level or even an above average level. If he stinks, yeah, they're going to struggle because they're in a tough division. But I just kind of have left the light on for maybe Deshaun Watson is a good quarterback still, and we're just going to see it. Go back and look at the second half of the Ravens game last year. That guy's pretty good. Like, he is good at football, maybe not good at other things off the field, but I still think the Browns could be. The Browns are one of my teams I'm buying this year. I'll switch my mind like I did on the 49ers last year very quickly if Deshaun Watson just looks terrible again, but I'm buying the Browns this year. I'm very, very high on them.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, again, keep saying this, but second year with Jim Schwartz as the coordinator, that's huge on the defensive side of the ball. They're better from a skill position standpoint. I'm not the biggest Jerry Jeudy fan, but like, they're having him in the room is still better. Cedric Tillman in year two, Elijah Moore second year on the team. That's going to be a mess for fantasy. the backfield might be a little bit of a mess for fantasy, but they have depth in the backfield. They have depth at the pass catching core. I mean, shoot, they even if Deshaun Watson doesn't work out, hey, let's start Jameis Winston on this offense and see what happens.
Oh,
you know?
Boy. The Jameis coaster. Let's go. Let's get it.
Like, why can't Jameis Winston do like a Joe Flacco impression from last year? But yeah, then especially is again on the offensive line, they dealt with so many injuries last year. That in and of itself is pretty huge. So I'm with you. I don't know how to feel about the Browns just because the Watson thing is like, where is he at this point? I don't know if he can ever be a top five quarterback again, but I'm not totally ruling out that he can be a serviceable starter. I don't think he'll ever live up to that contract. That's just impossible.
No.
But like a serviceable starter, I think that's possible. Let's move on to the next team here in the AFC. Again, the Dolphins. We're now into kind of this zone of it here. Dolphins, I mean, I think they're an easy candidate for this one, potentially. Yeah. And I know Dolphins fans are going to hate it, but is this team better than it was last year, Frank?
I can't see how it is. I really can't. It's hard for me to sit here and say the Dolphins got better this offseason. Now, they rallied a bit. I mean, you sign Kendall Fuller to a really nice deal, and you sign a couple other guys to fill in, but they did lose a lot depth-wise. I've brought up this stat a million times. Three guys this offseason signed $100 million deals to switch teams. One was Kirk Cousins. The other two left the Dolphins, Robert Hunt and Christian Wilkins. Now, we might sit here and say, Robert Hunt was completely overpaid. They were completely overpaid, but they're still good football players that the Dolphins lost in the interior of both lines. I just think that it's hard to just kind of run it back with a aging Raheem Mostert. He's not going to score 20 touchdowns again. And at some point, Tyreek Hill's going to go from being the fastest guy in the world to like the fifth fastest guy in the world. Maybe that he doesn't chase 2,000 yards every season. And the Tua contract thing hanging over the head. There's just a lot of things I don't like about the Dolphins, but the easiest thing, and it's low hanging fruit, I get it. But when you go 10-1 against losing teams and you go 1-6 against winning teams, that kind of shows me you're really not as good as your 11 win season last year. When they played good teams, they came up short, period. And that worries me about the Dolphins. Now, you could also tell me the story where they're top three offense again, because why wouldn't they be? All the key pieces are back. Like, they're not going to be terrible on offense or anything. And the defense might be good enough. A lot of the reason they struggled late last year was injuries. Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips go down. So you could tell me a story where the Dolphins are really, really good again. It wouldn't surprise me. But yes, they're a very easy candidate to take a step back this year.
Yeah, look, they're not better on the offensive line. They're not better on the defensive line. Like, Bradley Chubb, when's he going to be ready to rock? Jalen Phillips, when is he going to be ready to rock? Right. You know, is Chop Robinson a day one contributor? Like a day one plus starter.
He didn't do anything at Penn State. Like, are you telling me that he's going to go from what was 4 sacks at Penn State last year to like 8 or 9 or 10 as a rookie in the NFL? Like Ziggy Ansah did it, but it's pretty rare for that profile to hit big early in your career.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like, look, we know that the passing offense is going to be good and super productive, and we know the offense is just generally going to be good and productive, especially at particular points of the season. But like, when somebody shows you who they are the first, like, believe them the first time. And like, the Dolphins have shown us who they are multiple times so far in these last 2 years. I need to see that they're a different team before I kind of believe it. So we're going to have a very similar conversation with a certain team about in the NFC, but it's just kind of like, what's the point of talking about the Dolphins in September, in October, because it's ended the same type of way the last 2 years. And on paper, I think they have some different players they can throw at you from a pass catching standpoint. I'm interested to see what Odell Beckham brings. Like, I like Malik Washington a lot. And like Jonnu Smith, I think, is actually kind of a sneaky addition at tight end. But is that enough to be a completely different version of the team that they've been? I don't know. I think they're a team that we could talk about as a potential finalist for this exercise. Final team in the AFC before we toss to a quick break. Steelers don't count in this exercise.
Yeah, so I think we all expect them not to make the playoffs. But don't look, whatever. Mike Tomlin's a Hall of Fame coach in my mind. What if Arthur, like, everybody dunked on Matt Canada every single day. And Arthur Smith, for all of his shortcomings with the Falcons, was a pretty good offensive coordinator at the Titans, right? Like, maybe it's a big upgrade. I wouldn't be stunned if they made the playoffs, but I think we're all going to be picking them to miss the playoffs, sure.
All right, let's toss to a quick break. When we come back, we'll break down the NFC as a potential option in this exercise. All right, we're back. Frank, we're going to go a lot quicker in the NFC because there just frankly is not as many established teams. Not as many teams that really fit this exercise. I think starting with the 49ers. Do you want to do this again, Frank? Do you want to go out on the limb with this?
No. My whole thing last year was that we needed to see Brock Purdy do it again. And he did it. Yeah. To an extent, he probably could have won MVP if a couple things go differently, even though there was going to be bias against him being Mr. Irrelevant and all that. And everybody's like, oh, that's the thing, too. Is I heard somebody else say this. Like, if you didn't think Brock Purdy was worth anything, worth any MVP consideration, why didn't Kyle Shanahan win Coach of the Year then? Right? True. Like,
yep.
Coach of the Year is so dumb, but that's a different podcast altogether. Yeah, no problem with the 49ers. Brock Purdy has proven he could run that system impeccably. They're basically running it back from last year. Yeah, there's some receiver drama with Ayuk and even the Debo trade stuff from April. But no issues with the 49ers here. They're going to be great again.
Yeah, my expectation is they get Ayuk signed and at some point, like, that's it. Just keep on moving. They do one more push this year, and then next year maybe is a little bit of a soft reset. So I'm with you, not talking about the Niners in this exercise. Second seed in the NFC, though, a little more interesting, Dallas Cowboys. They're the team that I was talking about earlier when we just spoke about the Dolphins, where what's the point of talking about the Cowboys in September and October, shoot, even November, when they're dunking on the Giants and the Commanders four times a year, and it's like, oh my God, they blew out this team 38-10. We know how that story has ended the last 2 years. And this is another team where, like, Frank, tell me how the Cowboys are better this year than they were last year. I don't think you can do it.
Nope, I can't. But that's fine because they were really good. Like, their base is so good that I just kind of, this is lazy, but I assume they're going to be the exact same team we've seen. They're going to win like 11 or 12 games, either finish first or second in the NFCs, depending on if the Eagles rebound. And they're going to get to January and they're going to lose in the playoffs and not make the NFC Championship game. Like, it's weird. And I said this last year and I'll say it again. It's weird to think a team can win 11, 12 games, and I don't consider them a Super Bowl contender at all. Like, obviously, there's a story to be told that if this break happens, that break happens, they get a first seed, whatever. But I don't think this team's ever winning a Super Bowl or even making a Super Bowl. There's just something there that's holding them back. But I still think they're going to be good. I don't foresee there being any way the Cowboys miss the playoffs unless they really, really, really miss Dan Quinn, which could happen, or there's a lot of injuries, which you can't predict.
Right. I don't know, though.
Do you think there's going to be a big fall off here?
They're worse at running back. Tony Pollard didn't have a great season, but they're worse at running back.
They're bad. Right.
I don't know that they're better on the offensive line just by swapping, first round Tyler Guyton in Tyron Smith. That we all know their injury concerns, but he did play well and played for most of the games last year. Mm-hmm. The wide receiver room, like, they're just running it back from last year without Michael Gallup. Like, is Jalen Tolbert a plus starter for them in three receiver sets? Brandon Cooks is another year older. Like, I don't think he's a true needle mover at this point. They're going to build the whole offense out of CeeDee Lamb, which I've been saying for years before they started doing it, that they should do it.
Yeah.
And then you just, like, how often have we said so far on this podcast, Frank, like, turnover at coordinator really matters. Mm-hmm. Like, what if it takes a little bit for Mike Zimmer, who is a totally different style of coach than Dan Quinn, right? Dan Quinn is very much like a be who you are, you know, like just like a much more of a player's coach than sure as hell Mike Zimmer is. It's a very different defense too. I'm not sure how well Mike Zimmer's approach maps to taking out modern offenses. We'll see about that. So to me, there's enough questions here beyond just the normal Dallas questions about like, can they win in the playoffs? Plus there's the Dak Prescott, you know, contract drama. Yep. There's CeeDee Lamb contract drama. There's Micah Parsons, you know, drama, like Malik Hooker saying like, I don't know if players should be doing podcasts on a podcast. I guess they, you know, they get Trayvon Diggs back, which is nice. That should certainly help. But there's just, to me, I think a lot more questions about Dallas than maybe, especially just on the offensive side of the football, than we're maybe giving it credit for.
Very interesting. Very interesting. You make a good case. Maybe they get into the finalists here because, look, I can't discount anything you said. Like they're kind of worse across the board than they were last year. Now, I still think the key pieces are there for them to be a really good team, but you make good points. Maybe Dallas is a team that we don't see coming falling off like the Bengals last year.
Yeah, they feel a little Bengals-ish to me. But okay, let's move on to the third team in the NFC, Detroit Lions. Frank, I have nothing like negative to say about the Lions. You know, it's like either Jameson Williams, is he going to have this breakout season that they keep talking about? I think that's like the only question. Other than that, they're getting better on defense. They brought their coordinator back on both sides of the ball. A lot of stability. They re-signed their core. No drama coming in. I mean, I feel great about the Lions, and I really see, you know, maybe they end up falling off for one reason or another, but it's tough to see it on paper heading into the season.
Only question I have is if one of these two teams behind them in the NFC North takes a big leap. Packers could be great. I mean, they're pretty darn good at the end of last year. And we forget that the Bears almost swept the Lions last year. They blew a game in Detroit, or else they would have swept the Lions last year. We all like the Bears coming into this year. I don't think the Bears have that kind of leap in them. I love the Lions. I'm not going to sit here and try to make a contrarian case. I did in my mind. I'm like, are we too high in the Lions? And I just kept looking. And I've come to the point where when we get to August and our editors are asking us for Super Bowl picks, I'm probably picking the Lions to win the Super Bowl. That's how high I am on them. It's just, if they weren't the Detroit Lions, we would have no questions about them whatsoever.
Even the Vikings in that division aren't a doormat.
No, they're not. You know. No, they're not. Don't sleep on the Vikings. The Vikings could be a really sneaky good team. We all gave up on them, right? Because, they lost Kirk Cousins. They're kind of giving up, whatever. And then they kind of solved it with McCarthy. And I don't buy the whole Sam Darnold thing. Sam Darnold, we know who Sam Darnold is by now. McCarthy's going to start by the end of September. I'd bet on that, right? And then you look around. We were all gushing about Caleb Williams' supporting cast, right? Oh, he's got this and this. Well, what about Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, and TJ Hockenson is going to be back at some point. And Aaron Jones is a huge upgrade at running back for them. Their offensive line is no joke. The Vikings are one of those teams where they're going to be like 7-10 at the end of the year, and they're going to cover the spread in like 13 games. Like, not to get too gambling on you here, but they're a team that I really think is going to be much better than people expect.
Yeah, that's the only thing that gives me pause with Detroit is just that this division is going to be competitive. But overall, I don't have enough individual questions with them to kind of wave them through in this exercise. Bucks, NFC South winner, fourth seed. Again, I don't think they fit this exercise, Frank?
Really shaky. Yeah, they won on a tiebreaker. They were 9-8. I mean, we remember them more fondly. But I will say, look, because they beat the Eagles in the playoffs, I'll watch that. But I will say this, like, they were good at the end of last year. They went to Lambeau Field and beat a Packers team we all love now, right? Like, I mean, they were legit good. They just decided, hey, we're going to run it back. I don't know if that's the smartest thing because I don't know the ceiling here, but... yeah, if they win the division, it's going to be another, Buccaneers won the division at 9-8 again. Like, it's not going to be if they fall off, it wouldn't surprise us. If they win the division, it's probably not because they've won 13 games. They're kind of who we think they are.
That's the thing here is that I can totally see the Saints or certainly the Falcons beating them out for the division, but like, that wouldn't be that surprising. So I can tell you why I think there are some holes in the Bucs roster, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But I don't think that makes sense for this particular exercise. No. So let's move on to the Eagles, who I do think they're worth a conversation here.
Man, are they interesting. I'm just going to sip. I want to know what you think of the Eagles, and then I'll offer up mine. Because I'm writing a preview as we speak. I paused it to come on and do the podcast 15 minutes late because I lost track of time, but that's a different story.
you keep outing yourself on this show. I just want that on the record.
You're being very kind, Matt. What do you think of the Eagles? Because to me, I'm kind of confused. What do you think of the Eagles at this point?
Yeah, no, I actually was just talking about the Eagles on Chris Harris's podcast before this one.
And you were on a different podcast? You did a guest spot on another podcast? Really? Wow.
I got to stop. I need a body double. If there's anyone out there, that can do a really good Matt Harmon impression and wants to be like a stand-in for me, hit my DMs. Anyways, beyond that. my need for a personal assistant slash body double. I the Eagles are a team I think I've thought about a lot. Like, I did a piece for the site, like take shopping their offense, and I number one, you look at the roster on paper and it's really good. Okay. Mm-hmm. Players are all good. We know that. Then they're losing Jason Kelsey, which is a huge deal. Maybe the best center, you know, of all time, future Hall of Famer, the whole thing, integral part to that offense. But again, on paper, they have the players to replace that. Mm-hmm. For me, the questions with the Eagles feel more like a little bit kind of like ineffable in a weird way, that the questions I have about them are like, I think that Kellen Moore can push the right buttons to get this offense where it needs to go from a motion standpoint. Like, the stuff he's done conceptually from an under center standpoint is really good. I don't think he's the best offensive coordinator. I think he's got some problems in game sequencing, all that stuff, but the way he designs offenses is generally how you want to design offenses, to exploit great receiver talent, which they have, mm-hmm. but we've never seen Jalen Hurts do any of that stuff. That like mixing of those two, like what Hurts has done with the Eagles, which I think they kind of need to get away from, and what Moore will bring to the table. Those two things, can they mesh? I don't know that. That's an unknown to me. So I can see a lot of ways where, like, A.J. Brown has the best year of his career. They added some players, obviously Saquon Barkley, that should make this team a lot better. Defensively, I think some of the swaps they made are interesting. Mm-hmm. It's just I can also see, like, midway through October, this offense isn't firing on all cylinders, Frank, because it's just a lot of change going from what they've done with Hurts to what Moore has done, and like, who gives there? Who adjusts the offense? Is it a Hurts adjustment, and can he do that? Or is it a Kellen Moore adjusting to make the offense more what Hurts has done typically, which has been shotgun, you know, one side reads and then all that stuff. So I think it's very interesting, sort of the molding of those two concepts.
Great points. And I agree with them all. And think about from the coordinator level, like, you assume that they upgraded, but doesn't mean it's going to fit necessarily. It might, it should, but I don't know. This is a team, this is why you rarely see this, where a team is so good and then so bad overnight. They had a stretch of 31 games where they were 26-5. Like, that is like some, you know, dynasty type of record, right? You just don't do that in the NFL. From that point to the end of last season, when they got embarrassed by the Buccaneers, they were one of the five worst teams in football. Period. Yep. They were awful. Like, they weren't just like losing fluky games and getting in a tail. No, they were terrible. They couldn't do anything right. They let Drew Locke drive 92 yards on them to win a game. They lost by 20 plus to the 49ers and Cowboys. They blew a 21-6 lead at home against Arizona, who went 4-13 last year. They got pantsed in the playoffs by the Buccaneers, who were terrible. They were awful at the end of last year. So I don't know how to reconcile all this. I really don't. Like, because you look at I wrote, you know, one of the passages in my preview was, this team could win a Super Bowl. Nobody would be surprised. Yeah. It also wouldn't be surprised if Nick Sirianni is fired by Halloween. Why would it be? He barely survived. Like, I fully believe that Jeffrey Lurie was like, I'm 50-50 on this. Talk me into keeping you around. And they kept him around with basically, they stripped his power from him. So he's just kind of a figurehead now. Like, there's so much weird about the way the Eagles season ended. I don't know how to reconcile all of it. I don't know if they're going to be just back to what they were at the beginning of last season when they started 10-1. Or if they're going to be that team that was legitimately one of the worst teams in the NFL to fit. I have no idea. None. I don't know what to make of the Eagles.
What's so hard for me, Frank, is just like, I'm looking at the roster on paper and I think it's still really good. Mm-hmm. I think it's better.
Should be, especially like, with the draft they had with the corners. Yeah.
Unlike Dallas, I think they're better on paper than they were last year. Just like, even on defense, young guys getting better.
Yeah, Bryce Huff, you know, coming in for Reddick, and I get what you mean, but that same team fell apart last year. It looked like they had the look last season, and I hate being body language police, right? But they had the look late last season of, can we just get this done with so we could be away from each other? Because we don't like being around each other. We don't like playing for each other. We just want to be done with this season, and they sure mailed it in the playoffs. So I don't know, man. I get it. Like, their roster is really, really good. And they did. They needed to upgrade a cornerback, which it certainly did in the draft and all that. But just how bad. And Nate Tice, our colleague, did such a great piece. I think it was right after the Buccaneers loss, of what happened to Jalen Hurts on this Philadelphia Eagles team. Go read it. I'll link to it in my preview, which is coming out in a couple weeks. It was so thorough of what happened with Jalen Hurts. And it was everything. Like, everything went wrong for Jalen Hurts. He couldn't handle the blitz, and teams took away RPOs, and they had no counterpunch. And maybe that's a coordinator level thing, But also, it's just shocking to see Jalen Hurts put up a 77 rating over the final six games of the season when that team needed him. The Eagles are just confounding to me.
Yeah, and like I said, I think Kellen Moore is going to put the things in place to help that from a structure standpoint. From a structure standpoint, I do have questions about his in-game play caller sequencer, the whole thing. But can Hurts do that? That's the thing. Is I think this is, I don't want to call this like a tipping point season for Hurts or something like that, but I do think it's like a pivotal moment in his career, yeah. If that makes sense.
I agree, next step. Yeah, so, if he's that guy who struggled late last season, it's hard to come back in 2025 and be like, hey, Jalen Hurts could win MVP. Like, I don't know. Maybe that was a Carson Wentz type of thing where he just kind of caught lightning in a bottle one year. I love Jalen Hurts, but there's more questions than you like about him.
Totally. I don't think he'll ever fall off like that, but I think that we just might be like, this is the ceiling, and we have to have everything right around him, which is really, really hard to do. So we'll see. I don't know. Again, the Eagles, I may have talked myself into the Eagles with this one, right? Even though I generally feel pretty good about it. So last two teams in the NFC, Rams, Packers. I don't think Packers really count for this exercise either because, number one, I don't feel like they can fall off, and they were kind of like a sneaky playoff team last year. Rams, do you have any concern about the Rams? I can maybe see some flaws here, but me generally, I'm kind of high on the Rams and where they're at right now.
Yeah, I mean, Sean McVay proved last year that he's one of the three best coaches in the NFL, and they're never going to fall too far. I will say this, Aaron Donald's one of the 10 best players I've ever seen in my life, five best players I've ever seen in my life. You don't just replace a guy like that. He's unbelievable. So, yes, that worries me a little bit. But this Rams team was pretty rock solid by the end of last year. Even if they don't make the playoffs, it's not like they're going to be 5-12 or whatever they were a couple of years ago. They're always going to be competitive now. I will say this about the Packers. I think it'd be a big disappointment if they don't make the playoffs. A lot of people are just so high on the Packers. And look, think about it this way. And I always, again, going back to if one thing, like a butterfly effect. If the Seattle Seahawks beat the Pittsburgh Steelers at home, I think it was week 17 last year, the Green Bay Packers never make the playoffs. Jordan Love never has that game against the Cowboys. What's the conversation like about the Packers right now? It's a lot different than, oh my God, this Jordan Love might be, lead the league in passing yards or whatever. So they're a little more tenuous than I think. But for this exercise, yeah, they were the seventh seed and probably not the correct team to put as, this year's Bengals.
Totally. I'm pretty high on the Packers, and I would be disappointed after what we saw out of Jordan Love at the end of last year, and just all that pass catching talent if they're not a playoff team this year.
Yeah, but they're gonna be. They should be really fun.
All right, so Frank, I'm gonna do this a little bit unconventional here, because it's to me. Tell me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like the five teams that we entertained here for this were Ravens, Texans, Dolphins, Cowboys, and Eagles. I think. Again, I want you out of those five teams to give me your three finalists that you want to move, but not in any order. Then we'll rank them, and then we'll pick a winner here.
Sounds good. I'm gonna eliminate the Dolphins just because it just seems a little too easy. I'm sorry, Dolphins fans, but a little shaky there. Are you okay with me dumping the Cowboys? Because I don't know that I'm that low on the Cowboys.
Those are going to be my one and two, number one.
Oh,
and number
my goodness. The Dolphins are too easy. I'm not saying you're wrong about that. But
yeah,
I'll give you the Cowboys. Okay, let's take away the Ravens. They still have a Hall of Fame quarterback and a Hall of Fame coach and an infrastructure that even if they fall off, even if they're not the one seed this year, they ain't going to be 6-11. That just ain't going to happen for the Ravens. So let's take them off the list and leave the Cowboys out.
Okay, so that leaves us with the Cowboys, Texans, and Eagles as our three teams. All right, rank them. Most to least likely to be this year's Bengals.
I'd have to put the Cowboys third because I just like their base. Their floor is very high to me. They're going to be the exact same team we've seen the last couple of years, and everybody in February is going to be freaking out because they lost in the second round of the playoffs. So I'm going to put them at three. I'm going to put the Eagles at two because, again, their roster is really, really good. I just don't know about their – I don't know what juju they had coming out of last season, if they've changed that, but they need to. And then I have to put the Texans at number one just because, again, plexiglass principle here where I just think they improved so much in one year. And, look, maybe C.J. Stroud has another step forward, wins MVP, but it's easy to see them taking a step back. I don't think I'm going to be picking them to win the division. Maybe that's just the contrarian in me. I'm going to put the Texans number one on this list. What say you? Am I totally doing the 49ers thing again, where I'm looking the gift horse of the Houston Texans in the mouth and just being like, ah, they're not going to be that good.
Frank, I love you for being a bold man. Colin, get ready to break some ties here, because I'm going like literally the complete opposite order. I'm going Cowboys number one. I'm going Texans number three. And Eagles number two, which means all of their scores add up to four if we're trying to do this here.
MVP voting scoring style. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So Colin, producer Colin in the chat, you get to break the tie. And I guess he's not going to pick. I would be stunned. Oh, he says it is the Cowboys.
Yeah, he's going to. Of course, he's going to pick the Cowboys. Yeah, hey, right. You know,
producer Colin is the Cowboys fan, and he picks.
Yes, because they're all self-loathing. That's why they're all like, oh, my God, the ceiling's falling. And Mike McCarthy's the worst coach ever. And Dak is terrible and needs to get traded. And Cowboys fans are a hoot, man. I love Cowboys fans.
Yeah, nobody loves to hate their life more than Dallas Cowboys fans. A team that is more discussed, more relevant, and generally pretty good every year. But this is the year I definitely can see them taking a step back, especially, like, again, the Dak drama, change of the coordinator. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Frank, you are definitely, again, if the Cowboys end up being a great team, you get to come back on this show and tell me that I'm the idiot. Because
you didn't call me an idiot, so I don't think I'd do that. Maybe I'll just like see if I can get on one of these 14,000 podcasts you're on and maybe like break in somehow and call you an idiot there and do it anonymously or something. You know, you'll never know.
I need to get off a few of these shows. So, you know, I got two dogs. I got a wife.
Weren't you on The Bachelorette last night? Like, I was like, is that Matt? Like, he's everywhere.
Hey, because the show is over and we've named the Cowboys as the team, they get the honor, whatever. I do want to say, I watched The Bachelor last season with my wife for the first time. Never watched The Bachelor, never watched The Bachelorette. I think Jesse Palmer has the greatest job on planet Earth.
He acts so serious too when they go, guys, it's time to give the rose. Like, yeah, like, yes, you've known this woman for 14 seconds. Like, it's not gonna, like, and these guys are all like, oh my God, I can't, I have to stay here. This might be the love of my life. I'm like, dude, you sat down on a couch with her for less than a minute. Like, wow, okay. But Jesse has the life, man. I mean, he goes from NFL quarterback to like obviously good looking dude. It just walks into the, he's the Bachelor guy now. He's going to hold that job for 20 more years and make probably millions and millions of dollars, and just for this nonsense show that we all watch. It's great.
I mean, incredible life. He's making boatloads of money for sure. Net worth of $4 million. I'd love a net worth of $4 million. Uh-huh. That'd be nice. He comes out at the beginning of the show, chums it up with the Bachelor or Bachelorette, whoever the candidate is, whatever. And then, yeah, all he does is come into the end. He goes, and again, because I watched the season with you know, Joey and then the girls and everything, last Bachelor, he goes, ladies, this is the final rose. Like, Jesse, we know. There's only one rose there.
Again, I love that he's so serious. Like, this is going to decide the world peace or whatever. Like, this is the final rose.
I would love to. Okay, I love my job. I love charting receivers. I love hosting this podcast. I love going on all these other podcasts. If I could trade lives with Jesse Palmer, I would do it in a second.
I think you have to. Yeah, yeah.
He might have the
best job in America. He really might have the best job in America. My goal is to
graduate from Yahoo. I mean, look, Ian, I love my job. Bosses, my job. I want to stay here. 6 years, another 6 years, maybe 26 years. I would love to have that job. So anyways, on that note, which nobody cared about at all, Frank, I appreciate you, buddy, for doing this. Tell the people what you're working on. I know you're absolutely busting your ass right now on these team previews. So tell the people what's coming up.
That's literally my whole life from mid-June to the Hall of Fame game. So yes, team previews. I love doing them. I hope that comes through in the work. I'll pat myself on the back and say, I don't think there's much better previews out there. There are some really good previews out there that are worth reading, but if you give my previews a shot, I think you'll learn something about each team, whether it's your favorite team or just some random team you want to learn about. Love doing them. It gets me so fired up for the season. I'm really fired. I'm excited. Like, I realize we got a couple months to go before games start, but I'm fired up, man. This is going to be a fun season.
Yeah, I could not endorse Frank's work highly enough. Great way to get prepped for the season, you know, whether it's your fantasy prep or you're just, again, getting ready for the season. You will guarantee money back guarantee. You'll learn something from each one of Frank's preview. Appreciate you doing this, buddy. I promise I will bring you back on the show to do something positive, since I somehow have shoehorned you in to the Grim Reaper this exercise in particular. That is going to do it for this show today. Up next, we are continuing Flip the Script. Fantasy Pros Derek Brown, D-Bro himself, is going to join the pod on Thursday to identify, it's the one, baby. Who is this year's Puka Nacua? There's not going to be a one, but still, that's going to be a great pod, a loaded pod. Until then, we're out.